I'm John Kroll. Coming up on this special pre-recorded edition of No Limits, we will talk about the challenges of developing and holding on to an educated workforce in Indiana. For years, the state has struggled with the problem that has come to be known as the brain drain. Too often, talented young people leave Indiana after they graduate in search of better opportunities, taking their knowledge and their skill sets with them. We will talk about what it takes to train these folks, what it takes to keep them here, and what it means to Indiana to lose them. Our guests are Henry Fernandez of USA Funds, Risa Lovers of the State Higher Education Commission, Democratic State Rep Greg Porter, the Minority Leader of the House Education Committee, and Derek Rettleman of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. We can't take your calls, emails, or tweets, but we do hope you enjoy this fascinating and important conversation. First, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today in this special pre-recorded version of No Limits about an educated workforce and the brain drain problem in Indiana. We're fortunate to have as our guest Henry Fernandez of USA Funds. Henry, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Good to have you here. Risa Lovers, who is with the Higher Education Commission here in Indiana. Risa, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Greg Porter, State Representative and Minority Leader of the House Education Committee. Representative Porter, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, John.
Good to be with you. And Derek Rettleman, Vice President of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Derek, good to have you here.
Thanks, John.
Well, first, I think I'd like to start, just for the benefit of our listeners, with kind of a definition of terms here and how large a problem this is. And I think I'll take this in reverse order from the way I introduced you and start with Derek first. Derek, is this a significant problem for the state?
Having enough people who are college educated?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the main economic driver of our state. And, there's some interesting problems we'll probably get into here, but we've been behind the curve, probably largely the result of our economy, which didn't demand higher education for success in life. But that is rapidly changing and needing it a lot more. And then also with just the history of our overall higher education system and where we've been putting our focus largely on four-year institutions when, particularly in our economy, we need a lot more, perhaps, of the technical and certificate level. So, yes, absolutely a big issue.
Representative Porter, is that your perspective as well, that it's a significant issue for the state?
Yes, and it's interesting because I get to concur with my friend here.
How often does that happen?
Not too often, but we're going to write this date down.
Okay.
Sincerely, John, but as we begin to have this, continue to have this robust conversation, it is imperative that we begin to address this not only in the state of Indiana, but as within the school systems and throughout the nation. This is a national issue, and it's trickled down or it's bubbled up, the way you want to frame it, to moving to a crisis situation as we look at the global society. And all this has been spurred by looking at the global economy and technology and things like that.
What when you say it's become a crisis situation, what are the signs or signals that we're at
well,
a crisis right
we
now?
We break it down to the state of Indiana. Since 2000, we lost over 100,000 manufacturing jobs. And then we had an economic downturn, in 2006, 2007, and people were not well equipped to move into other opportunities. But yet and still, when you see Ivy Tech State College, for example, our two-year institution, their population has grown almost 200%. Over those last 4 or 5 years. And these are people looking for retraining dollars, retraining opportunities to go into the workforce. Not saying that they were not ready for their original job, but we're looking at a lot of mid-career individuals that now have to reframe the way they live and what they're doing in life.
Risa Lovers, are we, in fact, facing a crisis right now in regard to this issue?
Well, I hate to just use numbers, but I think numbers will tell the story a little bit. And the number I use is 41st. Hoosiers per capita personal income ranks us now 41st in the nation. And this has been almost steadily declining since the 50s. And it's basically because as you look at the economy and the kinds of jobs that we needed at one point, we were doing great. And the dream of the middle class life was alive and well in Indiana. Juxtapose against that number, the other number of 41st, which is that we are 41st in the nation in terms of our adults who have post-secondary credentials. Put those two together in a knowledge-based economy, and you have the makings of a real crisis here. And we are at the point in which Indiana's future is being decided. And it could go one way or the other. We can become the South of 40 years ago, or we can use this as an opportunity to embrace education and a better economy and a better life for Hoosiers.
Henry Fernandez.
Yes. Commissioner Lubbers linked the degree attainment with income, and it is a particular crisis for minority populations, the lack of income because of the lack of degrees. In the Hispanic population, for example, only 12% of adults 25 and over have a bachelor's degree, and the median income for those adults in Indiana is only $20,000, while the majority population, the Caucasian or white population, the bachelor degree attainment rate among adults is 24%, double that of Hispanics, and the median income is almost $30,000 for that population. So it's quite a significant spread in earnings.
So we're in agreement here that this is a significant problem. I suspect the place where people may start to part company is how you solve it. What steps should we be taking to solve this problem? Henry, I'll keep it with you for just a moment. What do you think Indiana should be doing then to meet this challenge?
Well, there's no panacea in addressing that complex problem, but there are a number of steps that Indiana could consider in taking, and Representative Porter mentioned one of them, and that's the improvement of our public school systems. When in the last graduating class there were probably 24 or 25,000 missing ninth graders that didn't graduate with their 12th grade class. You know, that's a significant problem, especially since many of those who did not graduate with their class come from poor and low income populations.
Teresa Lubbers.
I think academic preparation is clearly a key to this, and making sure that students leave high school prepared for career or college. And in fact, we know that 70% of our students who arrive at Ivy Tech need remediation when they get there. But I'd also like to bring up another issue, which I think is critically important, and that is the issue of affordability for college. And we are we rank 13th in the nation now in terms of the highest level of debt for students. The graduating class of 2001 in the nation has the dubious distinction of being the most indebted class ever. And so we know that in addition to not completing college, and might I be quick to add, we're talking not just four-year degrees, two-year degrees, quality certificates or workforce credentials, or four-year degrees. But for those who leave without one of those, they're 10 times more likely to default on their student loans. And so the combination of starting college academically unprepared and put together with that the inability to either enter college or stay in college because of the cost of college, and we have two very critically important issues that we need to address.
Well, and that seems to be we're obviously talking about Indiana here, but this is as I think Representative Porter said, this is a national problem. I know, in my other life as a college professor, we routinely get information saying that, an incoming class, three-quarters of them around the country, will not be prepared for the college experience in any way. It's not specific to Indiana, but where is it that they are falling down the most? Derek Rettleman.
Well, it's a lot like the challenges that we're facing in K-12 that we've been debating for decades now, that there is really no one problem nor one solution. We've mentioned preparation already, and that's a huge issue. Affordability is an issue. Another one that we're just starting to talk about is making sure that students are pursuing the right kinds of degrees. Not all degrees are worth the same, and we continue to have this debate on whether it's bachelor's degrees or associate degrees or certificates and what kind of values that they might have there. alternative delivery mechanisms. For Indiana, one of our biggest challenges is that we've got a sizable adult population that is undereducated for the modern workforce. We've estimated that to be over 900,000 of our employees, of our current workforce, don't have the basic credentials that they need to survive. So it's a whole range of things. We're not gonna solve this by focusing on just one issue alone, just like we can't make a big difference with K-12 by focusing on one issue alone.
Representative Greg Porter.
Well, I think as I weigh in on this from the legislative perspective, as policymakers, I think we need to continue to have this conversation as we talk about the 21st century and the reform that we want to have. To me, she's always representing. I mean, Senator Lovers talked about affordability, but it's about accessibility, affordability, and completion. Those are three ingredients as we look at our youth on what's going to happen in regards to them being ready for the workforce, even if it's a two-year institution or a four-year institution or certificates that we alluded to earlier. And as my colleague said, we have to embrace the students and their needs. Everyone's not going to be on track to do ABC. They may XYZ. So we have to understand how our students need to move forward and how to embrace their thoughts and their needs to be productive citizens in 21st century, because you know education is a way to move up and be able to address housing, to have quality of life. And it's all about the quality of life for Indiana residents as well as keeping those residents here.
You are listening to a special pre-recorded version of No Limits. Henry Fernandez, you had a point you wanted to make.
Yes, I mentioned earlier the low bachelor degree attainment rates that we have here in Indiana, and while we do have very few, relatively smaller numbers of degree holders, that presents an opportunity also to recruit more adults, or what we call sometimes non-traditional learners, back to higher education to complete their degrees and or their certificates for further study. And the challenge for higher education is how do we attract these non-traditional learners? How do we make courses more accessible? How do we give credits for experience? How do we restructure financial aid so that it makes college more affordable? There are challenges in just simply attracting and educating the adult population.
Well, and is there a sense that in some ways, just working within the framework that we've established, that we're playing only at the margins right now? In that most of the research I've seen is that education now is a lifelong commitment, has to be pretty much, and we don't really have models set up. We think of it as a beginning of life experience, and then you go out and work, and clearly now what we're seeing is more and more people are going to have to retrain mid-career, go back, refresh their skills. Have we set up mechanisms in which that can be done easily? Teresa Lubbers?
We're starting to, but we need to do it with a greater sense of urgency. Against the backdrop of the discussion that we're having, we need to keep in mind that this new student that used to be considered the non-traditional student is really the majority student. It's only about 25% of students go off and live on a campus and have a residential experience. Most work. They're first generation, low income, and they need a different delivery system. And it's imperative that we actually come up with these other models that meet their needs.
And it sounds like a lot of the issue, I keep hearing everybody is talking about affordability right now, about finding ways for people to be able to get the education that they need in order to be successful. How do we go about solving that problem? Derek Rettleman.
Oh, boy.
I give you all the easy ones, Derek.
Teresa may want to talk about this too, but the higher ed community has developed literally their own inflation index because they see themselves as living in a kind of a different world, to be frank. And so it's a very tough discussion to have right now.
We're going to pick up the question of affordability in just a moment. We are talking about the challenges of preparing an educated workforce here on No Limits. We're fortunate to have as our guest Henry Fernandez of USA Funds, State Higher Ed Commissioner Teresa Lubbers, State Representative Greg Porter, and Derek Rettleman, who is Vice President at the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Please stay with us. John Kroll. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm the director of the Franklin College Pulliam School of Journalism and your host. We are talking in the special pre-recorded version of No Limits about the subject of an educated workforce and the issue of the brain drain in Indiana. We're fortunate to have as our guest Henry Fernandez of USA Funds, State Higher Education Commissioner Teresa Lubbers, State Representative Greg Porter, and Derek Rettleman, who is the Vice President of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Teresa, we were talking just before the break about the affordability issue. Could you address that a little bit?
Well, I would like to address this because I, first of all, would like to give some accolades to the Indiana legislature, because when we haven't put more money into anything else, we have continued to put more money into financial aid. Even in the last days of this recently completed legislative session, another $22 million was put into financial aid. I would also be quick to add that Indiana, unlike many other states, is primarily a need-based state. So we give our state aid primarily based on need. Having said that, the sheer growth in the number of students who are going to college and need to go to college means that the average size of the grant to an individual student has gone down fairly dramatically. And so they are less able to count on financial aid to help them. Consequently, they need to make a decision about what they're doing. As Derek mentioned, you know, we need to tie the kinds of degrees that people are receiving with the kinds of workforce needs we have. Now, I'll be quick to add, it's wonderful when someone can follow their passion, and learning is always an important thing. But we also need to know that people cannot leave with the kind of debt they have, especially if the job that they take will not allow them to pay off that debt. So it's a complicated situation, but one in which we're working very hard at the commission to make sure that students and families understand early what the cost of college is and how they need to be ready, both from an academic standpoint and from a financial standpoint. We brought live this year a college cost calculator where students can go on and look and compare colleges in Indiana for the net cost, so they will know exactly how much does it cost to go, and compare Ivy Tech, Rose Holman, Butler, Indiana University, figure all the aid that they can get, figure out the benefit for having an academic honors diploma rather than just a core 40 and the extra money that would come to you. So we really have a communication task ahead of us to make people understand the what is available and what they need to take advantage of that.
I'd like to talk a little bit, just to shift gears ever so slightly here, talk about the economic impact of the state here. And to some degree, we've alluded to it, but also the economic impact to the individual. What it costs a person not to get the training or education to compete in the workforce today. Henry Fernandez, you made eye contact at a dangerous moment, so I'll go with you first.
Thank you, John. When you mentioned the personal impact, I mean, I could tell you my own story. I came to this country as a young child, with nothing in our suitcases, because we could only take one change of clothes, basically, out of Cuba. What my father was able to take out of Cuba to start a new life with his family of four kids was his education. And with his education, he was able to get a job and provide for his family. He also instilled in us the value of education. And all of the four kids, all of us, we pursued college, and we all have our, you know, bachelor's degrees and beyond. Unfortunately, not everybody, not all Hispanics, not all low-income folks who come to this country or who live here have that opportunity to go to college. Part of it is the barriers that they face.
What are those barriers?
Well, some of the barriers include the poor academic preparation at some of the K-12 schools, financial barriers as well as the perception of the cost of higher education. Some folks do not apply to the colleges that they might otherwise apply because they think it's just too expensive. Hispanics, for example, have an aversion to borrowing for college, so they make because they don't want to borrow. They don't see that, you know, it is in fact an investment that brings in significant funds.
Teresa Lubbers.
I wanted to mention just a couple other numbers.
Yeah.
One, I think over the course of an individual's lifetime, you're going to earn about $1 million more if you have a college degree. That's about, you know, $23,000 or $24,000 a year divides those who have only a high school or less from those who have a college degree. In some cases, some associate degrees tied to workforce needs are actually making more money than those with a four-year degree. In addition, there's been a lot of conversation lately about the value of a college degree because associated with the costs. I would be quick to add that even though there may be a problem for recent grads in finding a job, you'd sure rather have a college degree than not, because the unemployment rate for those who have a college degree is half of what it is for those who don't.
Derek Rettleman.
Yeah, it's critical for both our state and for individuals. And the Indiana Chamber's Board of Directors just heard from a panel of site selectors at the recent spring board meeting, and they talked about some things that are very strong for Indiana: central location in the country, transportation systems, tax policy. But the one thing that every single one of them put at the very top of the list as a deficit for Indiana was the quality of our workforce. So it's on radar screens of the folks nationally who are deciding where companies are going to go, where they're going to expand. So that's critical for job opportunities. Picking up on what Teresa said, we had looked at some earnings power of degrees just recently, and you know, we're one of the organizations that gets accused regularly of wanting to drive everybody into a four-year degree, and there's nothing further from the truth. In fact, I would suggest to you that the greatest demand that we're hearing now from employers is to have more associates and certificated employees. And we'll just note, for example, in some data we looked at recently, if you get an associate's degree in a STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math, you can earn on average 40% more than an average bachelor's degree. Even a certificate in a STEM field will earn 20% more than a bachelor's degree. And so it's not just a degree, but it's also a selection of degree, and particularly in STEM. And going back to the site selectors, that's what's expanding right now. It's those companies that are involved with science, technology, engineering, and math. And if we aren't doing that, if we aren't getting more kids and adults who are coming out of our kind of antiquated industries and looking at that, then the opportunities aren't going to be there.
Representative Porter.
Right. I have to concur in regards to the STEM relationships that we have. When I talk to young people now, I talk about life sciences and tell them all the opportunities are within life sciences. And if you look at the paper every 3 to 6 months or quarterly, there's another bioscience group coming on here in the state of Indiana. So, you know, we have a great school, Crispus Attucks Magnet Medical School that's there, and other schools like that. So I think the whole point is that we have to hit our children really young in regards to looking at math and science and engineering and technology and not be afraid of it. We as adults have to open it up for our students also. And it's not starting in college. It's not starting your junior year in high school. It's drilling down to elementary school and say what they can do. And as Senator Lubber said, she
old
always
habits
like,
die hard.
It's hard. Yeah, I mean, after 18 years, 17 years, it's kind of tough. It's just like being married, you know. but sincerely, $1 million. And when I talk to students, I say, you know what? You get a college degree or a certificate, you earn $1 million more than someone else. They understand economics. And even the smallest child understands that. So that gives them an incentive. But I think as we look at what we're doing in Indiana, as we said earlier, it's happening across this nation. And, you know, with the current administration, they're looking at more college graduates by 2015, by 2018, and 2020. They have benchmarks. And not only here in the state of Indiana, you know, we need 4 to 5 million more by 2020. College grads or certificates, whatever, that's what we need. And we just have to start it earlier and move forward and give them access to get there. And that's it. You know, we got to make sure that they do it, they understand it, and they believe in themselves.
Is that the direction we need to go, Henry Fernandez?
Oh, absolutely, because it's not just about the income of one person. In the aggregate, it is big, big money. I mentioned earlier that in the last graduating class of high school students, there were 24,000 missing students who started with their ninth grade colleagues 4 years back. That translates, if they had gone on to college, a lifetime in earnings of $6.1 billion lost to Indiana. if they had gone on to college, those 24,000. And that's multiply that year by year by year where we don't graduate enough high school students and send them on to college. There's a negative aspect of that too. If those 24,000 students, what are they going to do when they drop out of high school? What are their alternatives? Some of them end up in jail, for example, or in very, very low-income jobs that don't have health benefits. So there's a cost to Indiana for those things. If just by raising by five percentage points, the male high school graduation each year, Indiana would save $152 million in crime-related savings and will bring in additional revenues. So $152 million just by raising the high school graduation rate by 5% and sending them on to college.
I'd like to talk about the other end of this bookend. While we're talking here on No Limits about the problems of developing an educated workforce and then retaining it, so far we've talked largely about the issue of developing that workforce and locating those people, getting them the education. For as long as I have been around public policy in this state, and I started as a reporter 30-some years ago, we have talked about Indiana having a brain drain problem, that we train people and then they go elsewhere to seek opportunity. Is that still a significant problem for us? Derek Rettleman.
Sure. I don't have the numbers for it, but yeah, we know that's true. And part of that is because we've got some terrific universities that are pulling from all over the country and really all over the world. And some of those folks are going back home, some because they have to because of the laws that we have. And so that's part of it. The other part of it, though, is just what's the total mix of the workforce? And I've been talking about this a little bit, and I don't know. I still haven't found the economic models to show how it works. But there is some ratio out there, and it probably varies by industry, that for every bachelor's degree or master's degree, let's say an engineer with a bachelor's degree from Purdue, mm-hmm. you need some number of technicians to create a workforce setting that is effective. And we have, while we're doing pretty well in some of those bachelor degree productions,
we're producing still, the engineers, but not very many support structure.
Yeah, the Midwest economy is really built around those certificated and associate degree employees, and so for that reason, every state in the Midwest is ahead of the national average on the percentage of associate's degrees, except for Indiana. Indiana is behind the national average in the percentage of adults with associate's degrees. And so we have not built that mix yet. And that's one of the reasons why I said earlier, it's probably why the greatest demand right now among employers is more for that associate's degree and for the certificated employees to build that workforce around that that bachelor or master's or even PhD employee who is the engineer or the higher level there. So,
Teresa Lubbers, I assume you would have the best feel for why is it that we lag behind then some of the other states in the Midwest in terms of producing those two-year associate degrees?
Well, the reason is fairly obvious. It is because we are late to the game in developing a community college system. And mm-hmm. so we had our regional campuses primarily operated as sort of a community college, but they basically, for the most part, were doing four-year degrees, some associate degrees. So we only have a community college system that's evolved here over the last decade, and it's trying to catch up. We need more of everything. We need more bachelor's. We need mm-hmm. more certificates. We need more associate degrees. But proportionately, we need more associate degrees for the workforce needs that we have. Sometimes people will say, do we lose people from Indiana because we don't have the jobs, or do we not have the jobs because we don't have the right kind of workforce? And I go, yes. And because it's so true that we need both of those things, and that it is because we are in many ways the victim of our own success in that we didn't have to diversify this economy. We didn't have to change our education base. We were, going along very well with people having good middle class lives with health care and pensions and benefits, and it hit the wall. And I don't know if it was for a lack of leadership. I don't know if it's because people won't change until they have to. But now we're digging ourselves out of a hole But I do think that there is the will, and it's borne out in the sense of urgency that I see people have to convince their sons and daughters they have to have a college degree and to look at changing the state's economy so that we have the kinds of jobs there for students when they leave so that they will stay.
What steps do you think we should be taking, Representative Porter, to retain people, keep them here in the state?
Well, as I crisscross the country, you know, I tell people, you know, we come to Indiana because we do have a good quality of life and keep our students here because we don't have any mountains or lakes anywhere that young people really look forward to. But I think in order to keep our students here, one thing is to create more intern programs, internships. Mm-hmm. Once I think a student who, wherever he or she may be, is works within a corporation, and that corporation, they buy into that corporation, that brings them into that world, and it's kind of hard for them to leave.
More to the point, too, also, and I speak with someone who supervises interns, the corporation buys into the intern as well.
Exactly.
At that point.
Right. It is a two-way street. It is a two-way street. So that's important, as well as getting, professors and educators and people like that, as well as mentors, are very crucial too. We as a community have to embrace those students and keep them here and help navigate their way for that lifelong learning that we all talk about.
Henry Fernandez is someone who actually came to this state. You sort of reversed the brain drain for us. What do you see as the solution to the problem, to holding on to people? And I guess I might ask what has kept you here?
Hmm. Well, obviously, having the right job and the right entry to a job, like the internship programs that Representative Porter just mentioned, having the right job and offering jobs, very important, number one, to attracting a population of educated workers. Keeping them here is also a complex problem. I think having a welcoming environment, for example, for immigrants is also important, as immigrants are also a big major source of college-educated folks. And low crime, quality of life issues, arts, et cetera. You know, having a good social life is a way of keeping folks here.
A diverse community.
Yes.
A true diverse community. Not an illusion that, yes, we have a culture that's here, but your culture does not fit within this community. And that's important because young people pick up on that, well, I may be here, you may want me into your corporation, but are there real opportunities within that corporation?
For me to fit in some fashion.
Yes, exactly.
And to feel like I am part of the enterprise. Do we not have that now, do you think, Representative Porter?
Well, I'm not going to say we don't have it, but we shall continue to work on that aggressively. Cultural engagement is important to our community. As Henry alluded to, the arts, the sciences, and things like that, and little things that people look for. Cultural events bring in communities of a certain population, and that's the holistic approach in regards to the quality of life for everyone involved within that community.
We are talking about the problems of maintaining an educated workforce here on No Limits. Fortunate to have as our guests Henry Fernandez, Teresa Lubbers, Greg Porter, and Derek Rettleman. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking about the challenges of maintaining an educated workforce on this special pre-recorded version of No Limits. We're fortunate to have as our guests Henry Fernandez of USA Funds, Teresa Lubbers, who is a state higher education commissioner, Greg Porter, state representative and minority leader of the House Education Committee, and Derek Rettleman, who is the vice president of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Wanted to talk a little bit. We've been talking to some degree about how this affects Indiana And I'd mentioned actually when we were in the break that we had did a standalone program with Richard Longworth from the Chicago Council of Foreign Relations a while back, and he was arguing in some ways these challenges of preparing young people are in some ways almost too big for single states to deal with, that we need to be looking at more regional cooperation and having several states working cooperatively to meet challenges. I'm going to throw this first, I think, to Teresa Lubbers and to Representative Greg Porter because of their legislative backgrounds and the challenges there, and I'll start with Teresa Lubbers.
I do think that regional cooperation to address these problems is critically important, and we have four higher education regional compacts in this country. Indiana is a part of the Midwest Higher Education Compact, composed of 12 states, where there are many similarities between us because we are, in many cases, sort of digging ourselves out of the same manufacturing hole and trying to figure out how you reinvent an economy. We actually look together at how we can save money in higher education through cooperative purchasing. The purpose of that, of course, is not just for the sake of saving money, but so that you can serve more students with what you save, since there are more students showing up at our campuses. We're looking at sort of reciprocity agreements so that students on borders of states can actually attend a college at a different state if it benefits them, and you have some way to do that financially. So I do think we have started to think regionally. It is not easy. I mean, we've seen that even in other aspects when we try to think of central Indiana as a region rather than Indianapolis and other counties and cities, how difficult that is because there are parochial interests at stake. But I think thinking regionally about the issue of reinventing this Midwestern economy is a very wise thing to do.
Representative Porter.
Right. Teresa talked about the Midwest Higher Ed Compact. NCSL, National Caucus State Legislators, have come out with a Blue Ribbon Committee about higher ed. And some of the issues there is looking at it regionally within their various communities and how we need to be more effective and be more efficient in regards to educational outcomes of our students. So there is a huge national conversation. You have now a group out there that just had their first meeting, Grad Nation, in March. We have Ivy State College, where Senator Lubbers and I have been working with them about achieving the dream. And so the conversation nationally is there, and you have serious groups right now trying to figure out how they work with together to try to have better outcomes of our students. Former Commissioner Stan Jones is leading a group right now. So, you know, we have national presence outside of Indiana as long as with our great commissioner. So there are so many groups out there that they're trying to put together and understand what look at those economic impacts and how important that the investment in the human infrastructure that we need to move into the 21st century globally.
Henry Fernandez.
John, you asked about the cooperation, regional cooperation. And, well, in higher education, I think higher education, the culture is notoriously autonomous down to the professorial level.
You're anticipating my next question. go ahead.
And if we look at, part of the richness, I think, of higher education is the otana, the flexibility that we have and the ability to, you know, explore different topics and et cetera. But it sometimes that can also impede student completion and student, pursuit of their own goals. In Europe, if we take an example of what is happening in Europe, the higher education systems are cooperating across nations now, where colleges are accepting each other's credit and recognizing each other's degrees, whereas internally here in the United States, in our own states, some of our colleges have problems accepting credits from their own sister institutions within their own state boundaries. So we have to move beyond this autonomous culture that we have in higher education for the sake of the students.
And in fairness, I guess I should say, since I referenced Richard Longworth's book, one of the things he made a point of, and I'm indicting myself and my other profession as a college professor, is that we institutions of higher ed often don't play nicely together and work closely together, and that really we needed to start thinking of ways, rather than competing, of collaborating. I see Derek Redelman off to the side here nodding his head emphatically, so I'm going to let him jump in, and I know Representative Porter's got some things he wants to say.
I think it was way back in 1992 when the General Assembly said to our state institutions that they needed to come up with just 10 courses that would transfer across all of just our state institutions. And I sat as part of public television stations at the time, focusing on education, and sat in those meetings, happened monthly all day long for 3 years. And it took them longer than that to even come up with the 10 courses and how they do it.
Now they have 89.
Yes, they've made progress. Yes, there's definitely been progress. And yet, as Henry noted, I mean, there are credits within, we'll just say, within the IU system. You can't transfer from one branch of IU to another branch of IU, and that's problematic. There are other states that have now said that every public institution will now have the same course numbering system, and those credits will transfer without any problem. So it's, yeah, we're on that front, we're making progress. Teresa's right, but we're still behind where a lot of other states have gone and where can and should go.
Representative Porter, I
will say this. I said, we're not slow. We're just thorough. Okay.
Oh boy.
And, you know, that's on a legislative perspective. And coming in the 90s, I understand that. And it has been a challenge. And when we talked about advanced placement courses, dual credit, and all the courses that we need to be able to transfer, it has been hard. I mean, Senator Lovers and I were talking about doing full-day kindergarten. Everyone said, that's a slam dunk. She said, no, it isn't. And it wasn't. And it hasn't been. It's a very hard conversation. It's like having a cruise ship turning around in White River. I mean, it's that hard because some people do not want to give up their autonomy. But institutions understand economic development. They understand dollars. And in order for our dollars to have the best bang, you know, they're going to have to come together. They're going to have to look at how courses can work together in order to move our students on and to keep them within our state. All that is crucial as we continue to embark on this conversation.
Teresa Lubbers, do you see collaboration among the state's institutions of higher education now, or is that a place where we could see significant improvement?
We have seen improvement. We need to see more. And part of the way that we're doing this is we're trying to really evolve a system of higher education in Indiana so that we have a place for every student when we tell them that they need to go on to college. And that means that you perhaps have less competition among the institutions because it becomes clear what the mission differentiation is. We're asking our research flagship institutions to be what they need to be. We're asking our community college to be what it needs to be for the students it serves. Our four-year comprehensive institutions that serve 21st century scholars or low income or first generation. Ball State raising the academic requirements of people coming there. So we're really, and this is not the way we've thought about higher education in the past in this state. And, you know, put on top of that are 31 very active private institutions that are providing great service too, but have differentiated missions as well. Mm-hmm. Everything from open admission, really, to highly selective places like Notre Dame. And so you put all that and you mix it all together and you try to figure out how are you going to have a system that is integrated, differentiated but integrated, and transfer is just one of the many ways that we have to talk about it and get better.
Well, and I guess, Henry Fernandez, we've talked about sort of the challenges of doing this. It sounds like, to some degree, the model that we'd be looking at here is that rather than having competing schools in a particular area, we ought to be identifying one institution that, and that's their center of excellence or whatever. Do you see that happening as someone who monitors higher ed here in the state, or is it a place where we still need to do a lot of work?
Well, there's a place in our higher education system for you know, for specialization and for we don't need necessarily duplication. What we do need is for alternatives for students to get their higher education degrees, their education, and the flexibility of higher education to recognize there are that students learn in different ways. So whether we have you know, the one of the latest in my opinion, and very needed in addition to our higher education system is the Western Governors campus that we have, or the system that we've set up here, because it provides another a flexible and you know, option for higher education students.
Teresa Lovers, please.
The reason why that was more easily accomplished in Indiana than you might think is because the age of a student going to WGU Indiana is 36. They only give four-year degrees. So they're not competing really with the community college. In fact, there is a seamless transfer between the community college and WGU, and they're not really competing with the four-year institutions as much because they're older students who are going there. So there is a way to make this work for every student, and integrate it with these alternative offerings.
Representative Porter.
Yeah, and well, with these alternative offerings, we also... I would pose a question back to John. And
okay. Normally not the way it works around here.
Well, no, but as an institution,
okay.
How do we, my question would be, we're doing this, embracing it and trying to turn things around and looking at the finances, we look at what's driving the change. We have a lot of foundations out there now that are beginning to set the agenda. And that's very crucial that we must begin to literally really deliberate and think about. Our institutions don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Okay. The money's coming from various foundations, which I will not start naming them off, but those of us at this table understand who they are. And they began and have been in the last few years setting the agenda on what we do and bringing out the issue about the workforce. So as they continue to bring dollars to the table, how much of an impact are they going to have?
And that raises issues of accountability.
Exactly.
And,
and that's something that I think we will continue to deliberate.
This seems to be a subject that everyone wants a piece of, including Derek Rattleman.
Well, just this mention of WGU, where they have focused particularly on adult students who have some college but haven't completed. We've by our estimates are we've got 700,000 adults in Indiana who have some college and no degree. Now there's a wide range there. You've got everyone from, you know, someone who took one or two courses and then dropped out to someone who is one or two courses away. We've even got students out there we're discovering who have taken more credits than they need for a degree, but just haven't gotten the degree yet. There's a little bit of low-hanging fruit right there that could be an initial focus of our work, and that's one of the benefits of WGU. But that's a narrow part of that subset, and it's one area where we probably need to put some real attention.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, so I'm going to ask. Actually, Derek gave me a perfect segue for this as kind of an exit question here. I'm going to take it around the horn real quickly. I'll start with Teresa Lubbers. What would be the first most important thing we could do right now to better prepare young people in this state? First step, I know we've said around here that there are a lot of things we got to do. Where do we start?
Well, from my lens at higher ed, I think the embracing of common core standards and assessments at the college level that monitor those assessments, I think, is key. And you can talk about all the way back, as Greg has earlier, about the early preparation. But through my lens right now, we need to make sure that students are academically prepared and we know what college ready means earlier in high school, and we get them the help they need or we let them move on.
Henry Fernandez, we got about 2 minutes left.
I concur. Academic preparation is number one. I would add information about the college process, the college admission and college financial aid processes. Very important in choices.
Representative Greg Porter.
I would drill down even more, begin to address the dropout rate. When do our children disconnect, which does impact their investment of our educational system? What are we going to do about the dropout rate, and how do we address it early on to get them to move through the system?
Your colleagues were generous to you, Derek. You got about a minute.
Well, I would agree with all of that, but I would also say I think one of the most important things is to educate our students and also incentivize our learning institutions to focus on where the demands are. We've been out of balance for a while on what kinds of degrees that we're offering. We need more of everything, but we need to educate folks to realize that there are great opportunities out there, for example, with those associate's degrees and certificates, and particularly if they go into the right field, and STEM field's really the focus there. So I think particularly educating people on what the opportunities are for the future, because not all college learning will lead to the same opportunities.
Wow, this hour went fast. I would like to thank all of you. Henry Fernandez, thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure talking with you, as always.
Thank you, John. Glad to be here.
Teresa Lubbers, always good talking with you. Thank you for joining us. Representative Greg Porter.
Truly a pleasure to be with you.
Great pleasure to be with you. Derek Rettleman.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. We have been talking about the challenges of preparing an educated workforce here in the state of Indiana and the brain drain problem. We will be back next week with a live show in which we will deal with the challenges of prescription drug abuse. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us and hope you will be with us next week. I'm John Krall, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism. Thank you for spending this time with us. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Matt Sosi, and Intern, Monica Schwab. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.